Welcome to the For the Church podcast, another great gospel-centered resource from Midwestern Baptist Theological Seminary. My name is Jared Wilson. I'm an assistant professor of pastoral ministry and author in residence at Midwestern Seminary. And I'm here as always with my friend and my colleague and my co-host, Ross Ferguson. I've got to comment on something.
Okay.
So you have a Pepsi with you.
Yes.
Pepsi Zero Sugar.
Yes.
I'll note for those of you concerned about Ross's sugar intake. Pepsi Zero Sugar. You are the most diversified soda drinker. Sometimes it's a Coke Zero. Sometimes it's Iron Brew. Sometimes it's some kind of
fizzy water
yeah. thing. Do you just like, I mean, what do? You stop at a convenience store or do you go to the store and buy individual cans of things? Why do you always have something different?
I think it fits my personality that I get bored kind of easily.
What in the world?
So drinking the same thing over and over again is just, I kind of find a bit
you're
boring.
Not a loyal customer.
Well, I'm loyal to about 7 different brands.
Okay. Yeah, no, that's not loyalty though.
I just fancied something different. So the Iron Brew, the Coke, the Pepsi, that type of thing, that's caffeine intake. So I don't drink tea or coffee. So to me, those are caffeine intake drinks. And then I want some non-caffeine intake drinks. So I have a set of non-caffeine.
So, and you're not a water drinker?
Not really. No.
Yeah. So it's got to be something fizzy.
I'll drink water when Miriam tells me, when was the last time you drank some water?
Oh, my word. Do you drink like sparkling water? Like the non-flavor, what do they call it? Seltzer water or tonic water?
No one likes that.
People do. Yeah,
no, they don't.
They order it.
No, they don't. Here's the thing. They like it because they haven't tasted what's actually good. And when they taste what's actually good, they all go, that's good.
That's a strong take.
But that would be too bad for me. I couldn't drink that every time.
Yeah.
I was like, you're just trying to be healthy. Stop trying to be healthy. Drink water or drink something tasty. So.
Yeah. I'm pretty much an exclusive water drinker. I'll do Coke Zero maybe once or twice a day. I'll have a Coke Zero, usually in the afternoons or evenings. I'll start the day sometimes with a coffee.
Mm-hmm.
When I'm at home, it's just, I mean, it's very low rent. It's just the Keurig,
yeah.
You know, and I drink it black, just a black decaf coffee. But I always have a big thing of water with me while I'm doing it.
That's an American thing, though.
Is what is?
I always have water with you.
Yeah, I guess so.
So in the UK.
That's because over there, the water's like infested or something?
No.
It make you sick?
Our water's way purer than it is in America. Way purer.
Okay, all right. It's been sitting in cisterns for thousands of years.
No, it comes right off the mountains.
The mountains of England?
Scotland.
Oh, okay.
All right. I'm going to say is, in the UK,
yeah.
We're not carrying around like 3 gallons of water thinking we're going to die of dehydration every single day. I don't get it.
It's not about dehydration. Sure. It's about keeping the body like running like a machine, you know?
Okay, I have. I was thinking, should I say this? Yeah, I'm going to say
this. You're going to say this as a Pepsi Zero Sugar.
I'm going to say this. You're going to say a health thing. So America is the most obese country in the world, and they're also carrying around 3 gallons of water.
I don't think the obese people are carrying around the 3 gallons of water. I don't.
Okay. I have strong feelings on these large bottles of water.
So. I can see. Yeah. Well, some people say we should cut down on the bottled water because of the
recycling.
The recycling, and also just the money, right? You can open up the faucet and get water. And as it happens, we're talking about money.
See, I thought you were going to do a transition by saying, show me the money.
Oh,
yeah. No,
I didn't do that.
You didn't do that.
I was thinking about singing money, 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 money,
money.
they're from the UK, right? Isn't that Pink Floyd?
Yeah.
Who is that? Okay, yeah, Pink Floyd. We're talking about money. What's it really for?
It just sounded really boring. It was like,
why is
are we on a Dave Ramsey podcast now?
Yeah. Oh, man. No, we are not. Let me ask you this. Why do Christians, this is the main thing I really wanted to talk about. Why do Christians find it so difficult to talk about money?
Oh, this one's easy to answer.
Oh, okay. Easy as why Americans carry around water while they're still obese.
They love it and they want it.
That's why they find it difficult to talk about it?
Yep.
Because they want it and they love it.
Yep. Because here's the thing. We all know that we shouldn't really love money. Scripture is very clear on it. Multiple verses.
Yeah.
Love of money is the root of evil.
Rich people, it's hard for them to get into heaven.
We all know that it's kind of embarrassing if you have a lot of money, because the first question kind of people are thinking is, do you love money? Are you giving away? Those that don't have money almost have kind of like a righteousness about them of kind of like, you know, I'm living that poverty life because that's how God has put me. But when you boil it all down, I have not personally met somebody that's said to me, I don't want money. And at no point in my life have I ever thought about it in a positive way.
Yeah.
People want it. And to some extent, we all love it in some form of way, whether it's the actual storing of it or what it gets us. And so then in Christian circles, we know the passages and we don't want to talk about it, because the truth is, we know if you pressed us, you're going to find that I love it and you're going to find that I don't want it.
Is it one of those things, you know, they say that the people who say looks aren't all that important tend to be really attractive, and it's the people who say, I hardly ever think about money, and it's because they can afford to.
They
have enough money that they don't have to think about it.
Yeah, exactly that.
Yeah, if you were in need of money, you'd be thinking about it a lot more.
Yeah.
And certainly, you know, we've both been in situations, you know, where when you don't have a lot, like, it's hard not to think about something else. Like, how can I make more money? How can I, you know, got to get the car fixed, got to, you know, pay the rent, whatever it is.
Yeah. And if you, like, if you talk about all the different facets of money, if you talk about the prudence of saving money, then people don't like talking, because that means that they're going to probably get hit on the generosity side. If you talk about generous side, they're probably going to feel guilty because maybe they're not being as generous. No matter which way around you go about this, there is at core, I think, in all of us, a desire to have it, a desire to use it, and a desire to enjoy the pleasures that come from money. And I just think, apart from a few missionary friends of mine who ultimately still have that desire to want it, I think that's why we struggle to talk about it. I think if you stood up, say, in you know, you came across a passage as part of the regular preaching in the church and you were preaching on money, without a doubt, there's going to be people in the room that are going to look at you and they're going to try and determine how much money you have and whether you should be preaching on money and whether you have more than me or less than me, or he's only teaching about money because, you know, he's clearly very generous and now I feel pressure. It's always going to come down to how much you have, how much I have, how much we secretly both want it.
I think the reason the Bible says so much about money or about, you know, riches and that sort of thing is because, as you kind of said in your introductory thought, it's so tied to what we worship.
Yeah.
It's so tied to the little g God in the world that to talk about it almost feels like you're poking someone in the idol. You're poking into their heart.
Yes.
You know, we've all heard things like, if you want to see what somebody worships, look at their checkbook or their bank account, right?
Yeah.
Things like that. And so to talk about money, I think, is in some ways it feels invasive, even if you're not like personally invading anybody, just the subject itself.
Yeah.
So, but even culturally, you know, I don't know if it's like this over in the UK or not, but you wouldn't ask someone over here, how much do you make?
Oh,
and you wouldn't say, even like, you know, in a family, like the kids.
Yeah.
You don't tell your kids how much you make.
Definitely don't tell your kids what you make. And here's the simple reason, is because your kids will then tell everybody else. No, you're so true. In the UK, we don't talk about that type of thing. That's very private.
Yeah, yeah.
And I remember actually watching a TV show where they went into a company and they said, we're going to do something we've never done before. We're going to release every single person's salary.
That's a bad idea.
And we're going to show that. And in 3 months' time, we're going to come back and the company is going to vote on whether they want any changes to occur. And when they released it, it was crazy. Like, the people at the exact same level were paid more or less and all different things. People were shocked at how much the boss was making. But the biggest shock across the whole thing that united people was how low the cleaner was being paid.
Oh.
And actually the one thing they were united on was to raise her salary up. And what I thought was really interesting is they united on helping the one that was in poverty to avoid attacking the ones that were in riches. So I thought that was just a really interesting thing. But it was based on, again, coming down to, why would you tell people what you earn? Just recently, someone asked me, what would be your desired income in kind of pastoral ministry? And I just outright said the number. And they were really shocked that I was willing to say the number. And I'm like, because for me, I actually think speaking about it helps us normalize the fact that we all struggle a little bit with what we think is right and not. And we're sitting in a seminary. Every single guy that graduates from here has a salary expectation that he wants the church to pay him.
Yeah.
And there is just a reality that those expectations are usually kind of incorrect and unbalanced. But it's more even the, quote, the holy guys that are going into ministry.
Yeah.
They all have a figure they want. So, yeah, I think once we accept that, I think we can then start talking about money in a how we handle that, how we handle our almost universal tendency to want it.
Yeah, this may seem like a rabbit trail, and maybe it is, but you know, when you mentioned guys who are looking for certain salaries, churches who won't post the salary range, like this is the lowest we would pay. Yeah. This is the you know, range of pay for this position. When they don't do that, and you just get so many meetings deep, you know, with a candidate, and then you find out what they are desiring is beyond what you can pay, and you've wasted so much time on both parts, right? Like, I remember when I was looking for, you know, because it was so hard to talk about money, I didn't bring it up.
Yep.
I'm like three interviews deep, and finally it comes up, and they say, how much, you know, do you, which I don't like that question. Yeah. How much are you looking for? And I'm like, well, what if what I tell you is actually lower than what you were planning to pay? Yep. Then you're like, oh, we're getting a deal out of this guy. I want to know what your range is. Yes. You know, so I told them what I would be needing, and they said, that's more than our senior pastor makes. And this was me as a looking for a youth, you know, role 20 some years ago. They're like, that's more than our senior pastor makes. And I thought, well, we could have saved each other a whole lot of time.
Yeah.
It wasn't a lot of money, to be honest with you, Roz. It wasn't a lot of money. So I was like, that's what you're paying your senior pastor?
Okay. A few very kind of quick, because as you say, a little bit tangent, a few kind of quick points on this. Number one, don't give a salary range based on experience. Give a minimum salary. So this is our minimum budget is, I'm just pick a figure out this guy, 50,000. Our minimum is 50,000. And then just bracket it and say, dependent on candidate circumstances. Because the reality is you might have somebody with very low experience, but has four children, and that salary is probably not going to be as enough.
Especially if they got to get their own healthcare and
exactly.
those sorts of things.
So what you want to do is if you as a church has a budget of say 100,000 for a pastoral role, I'm just, again, I'm picking numbers out of the sky here. What you want to probably be doing is posting on your job description a minimum salary of 80,000 bracket dependent on candidate circumstances. And so you have some budget room depending on who applies. Second, stop being embarrassed about the Lord's money. If the church is going to pay their pastor, then pay their pastor and be open about that. And third, if you're worried that you'll get loads of applications because of the amount you pay, praise the Lord that they see you as generous. If you are worried about how few applications you get for how little you pay, you might need to be thinking about paying more. There's just a reality that you need to start normalizing that the pastor earns an income.
Yeah.
And normalize that and be open about that. And if you have embarrassment over the number, then deal with that number. If you don't want to have to deal with all the applications, then I'm wondering who it is you want to apply for. The Lord will send you the right person. There's a few different notes on that in terms of ministry. You had some different questions for us in terms of the thoughts on money. So that's why I personally think it's hard to talk about it.
Right.
Let's ask this question. What is money really for?
What is it for? Oh, well, as with all things, it's for the glory of God to be stewarded that way. It's interesting, you know, you mentioned in the beginning, one of the reasons why we struggle to talk about money is because how often the Bible talks about money being, or the love of money being the root of all of evil. Drawing from 1 Timothy 6, verse 10, not drawing, but 1 Timothy 6, 10 says, for the love of money is a root of all kinds of evil. And that has somehow been twisted, or just the telephone game is money is the root of all evil. Well, that's not what the Bible says. But we're used to verses like that and Jesus's warnings, you know, it's harder for a rich man to get into heaven than a camel go through the eye of a needle, you know, things like that. But the Bible also talks about riches as a blessing.
Yes.
And wealth as a blessing.
Yes.
And money as a blessing. So it can't be, you know, is money evil? No. It's, I think in the pastor's justification, I wrote that money is a tool like rope.
Yes.
And as with rope, you can use it to pull someone out of a ditch or you can hang yourself.
Yeah.
That's why money is somewhat volatile, or at least our thinking about money is volatile. You can use it to hang yourself, as, you know, 1 Timothy 6:10 continues to say, by craving it, some have wandered away from the faith and pierced themselves with many griefs. So money makes a terrible God, but it can make a great glorifier of the one true God.
Yes.
If we are generous, if we steward it well, if we use it with wisdom, and there's nothing wrong with having a lot of it, provided you are using it as a tool to pull people out of ditches and to glorify God. So I think that's how we think about money. I want to circle back to the pastor and the money thing. We got a question. Sorry, I mean, I don't know if you want to keep following that, and we can come back to that as well. We got a question for the mailbag recently. We haven't used it yet, and so maybe we'll bring it in here, where a fellow says, should a congregation know the pastor's salary? And there was more context of the question. We can answer that question too, but he basically said, I have some money. I have some, I don't remember if he said he was wealthy or not, but
I think he had investments.
He had investments and some other money from other places, either for, you know, previous work life or inheritance or just investments that, that had turned out really well. So in some ways he was independently well-resourced. I don't know if he's rich, but independently stable with finances. Should his church know about that? And I feel like he didn't say this, but I feel like the only reason he asked that question is if you think
it's because he's being pressed on
they hear or they hear if they hear that he suspects they'll be like, oh, well, we don't need to give you a raise or we don't need to pay you as much because you already have this money from somewhere else.
Two questions. Should the church know what you pay the pastor? Yes.
Okay.
I think we might disagree on this. Yes.
Universal yes, but okay.
Does he need to disclose his financial dealings? No, with a caveat. And the caveat is he should instruct someone about them. I think it's a good prudence as a pastor to have somebody that you can walk alongside and say, here's kind of my financial dealings. I remember a men's group I was part of years ago where one of the questions are you honoring God in all of your financial dealings? And it was so easy just to say yes to that. And what you actually want is a partner in Christ that you can say, hey, this is kind of what the Lord's blessed me with. I'm thinking about doing this. Can you give me some advice? It's just good to have a confidant in that sense. So no, I don't think he needs to share it to the church. Should he share it with somebody? Yes, I think he should. I think he should have someone to walk alongside with.
Yeah, I mean, in the same way, I don't know that the, you know, every decimal point is the business of everyone, and maybe that's a particular American thing. I don't know. But I think to be known is for people to know you and, you know, maybe not like, you know, again, to the, you know, to the number, what your salary is or what your income is, but to know that you have this in your life. And I don't know that you have to, like, you know, issue a financial report for for your investment income to every member. The reason why, to come back to, should congregations know what a pastor, you know, what they're paying their pastor. I'm going to say usually yes.
Okay.
But not universally yes. So usually yes, if only because, and my answer is ironic, only because I think too many churches underpay.
Yes.
And I think it should be a public chastening of them to have to look at that financial report every year and go,
they get paid.
That's what we're paying our pastor.
Yeah.
Now too many of them look at that and go, yep, keeping him honest.
Yeah.
You know, we're he's really got to rely on the Lord at this church, you know. They look at it that way when I think we should look at it and go, oh my word, like how is he doing it? And it should prompt us to look out for him personally. Can, you know, reach out, hey, can we bring you dinner this week? Can we, you know, love gifts, those sorts of things. The only time I would say no
is
in churches where you have a growing staff. And so I'll put the cards on the table for Liberty Baptist Church. We made a move. The congregation approved this. It wasn't a unilateral thing from leadership a number of years ago to conceal all staff, not just the pastor, but all staff salaries and lump it all into one payroll line in our financial statement. So you can see in the budget what we pay the staff.
The staff.
But you don't see individual lines. And the primary reason we did that, I was on the personnel committee at the time, so I'm even making the motion at the meeting where we voted on this. The primary reason we did that was not to hide individual salaries from the congregation, but to allow us to work with individual employees for raises and other things like that. And there wouldn't be tempting them to look at, oh, well, that guy's getting paid this while I'm getting paid that. Kind of to the point of like where they did that in that
different
company.
Levels.
I was like, that's a bad idea. But any member of our church can request. So we're not saying you can never know. Individual members.
Public.
Yeah, it's just not made public. So individual members can come and request to see the individual salaries, and we provide that to them. So we're not hiding it from everyone who wants to know.
So would you allow, because it's saying individual members, sorry, this is really a rabbit trail.
Yeah.
Would you allow then the personnel that is being paid as members of the church to request that information? Does that make sense?
I think one of the reasons for having the individual inquiry would be that we can pastorally even, so in some ways, inquire like why they
do
want
you,
to
why
know.
Do you want to? Which could be like, you know, I want to know about ex-pastor's salary because actually they've just had 3 kids or 4 kids, 5 kids. I just want to see if it seems like they could actually live off that.
Yeah, yeah.
Where if it's just like, because we need to shave some money from different places.
Theoretically, yes. If an employee came and, I mean, theoretically, yes. Yeah. But pastorally, we might would say, you know what? The reason we've set this in place is because of situations like this.
I can see that. I think again, just comes back to my personality. I'm not really worried about that sort of stuff. We'll cross that bridge when it comes to if it ever happens.
And that's why I think normally, yes.
But I can see the wisdom in that.
But not universally.
I think one of the biggest issues within churches and pastors, let's just say churches and staff, because there's obviously other people that get paid in the church. There is unrealistic expectations from the staff, usually. Certainly we're seeing this in the seminary where students are graduating and they have lofty figures they want to get paid. And then there's unrealistic expectations from the church, that the church tends to, on a whole, normatively underpay rather than overpay. That tends to be a very normative thing. And whether you're sitting on personnel committee, church member, or a staff member listening to this, both have to come to the table. Your lofty figure needs to come down a little bit. Church, you need to recognize that you're likely the sole income for a household, or certainly the large chunk of the income for that household. And you do want to be known as one that is generous. We don't want churches to be miserly. We don't want staff to be full of pride in what they should deserve. Both have to come to the table. And I've been ripped on this on social media so many times because like my viewpoint is it's a both and situation that both the church and candidate need to come together and have those expectations kind of knocked back a little bit. But mainly it's pastors or what I will say is candidates that have yet to find a job that are furious at that take because their perspective is this is the number I need for my family and I'm unwilling to budge on it.
We've talked about this a bunch of times.
We've definitely talked about this.
I do think it's a both and thing as well. Yeah. And I think a lot of churches, I mean, they're rightly saying we cannot afford more than this. Like, you know, given
this
how many people
we can go to,
given the economic realities of the people in our church, whatever it is, this is the max we can go to. And I think maybe the compromise that they need to make is not, okay, we can pay you another 20 grand because they don't have that. It could be, okay, we're open to a bivocational or something, you know, like that.
Going circling back, you got to circle back. I'm going to
circle on back. Let's make this a Mobius strip.
What is money used for? Was it for? I thought I could probably split it into three categories.
Okay. So glorify God is just one aspect of something.
That's like one. I would say
I'm making fun of you.
Glorify God is overarching.
Okay, there you go.
Overarching. Okay. It's the umbrella with my three things underneath it.
Okay.
Number one, family.
Okay.
So 1 Timothy 5:8 says that we're to use our resources to provide for our families, to provide for our household. So I think remembering that provisions for one's family is first and foremost for needs. And if the Lord blesses for some wants. And so, you know, do you need three cars? Maybe not. You know, it's provision for family's needs, the roof over your head, the food in your belly, to some extent, the education and working environment.
PS4, things like that.
Yeah, absolutely. PS5, you know.
I'm not a gamer, so.
No, nor am I. So I think that's one element. I think another element is the church. So we do know that scripture talks about that we are to honor the Lord with our wealth, Proverbs 3:9, that the Lord is to have our first fruits and the Lord is to, and his people and his work and his church is to receive the funds that we have received. Ultimately, the Lord has provided for us and we are to provide for the church, his people. So I think that's the second category. And we can go down a world of whether you should tithe or not, but ultimately what we're seeing in this verse is that the Lord's church, the Lord's people should be honored through the giving of the wealth the Lord has given us. And then I think the third category is just, I put this just as an expansive category called ministry, ministry to others. I think it was Matt Chandler several years ago that said that him and Lauren, I think it was weekly they did this in the early days, maybe they moved it to monthly. They would sit down and they would look at their finances and then they would have a generosity column on their finances. And in the early days, pretty small, you know, what was left over at the end of the week. And they would just ask each other, how could we be generous? Like, what are we going to slip into this little column here? Flowers for this person, bill for that person, a meal, a gift card. What are we going to use with this little extra cash? And what I'm meaning by ministry is just that expansive look of, okay, I've provided for my family. I've given to the Lord's work. Again, different conversation, what percentage? And here's X amount of money left. What can I do for the Lord's ministry. And one thing I'll say is often when we think about that, what we think about is how can we give it away? I don't always think about ministry in the giving away of money. I think about enveloping others into the blessing that we have this. So often, just as a family, one of the things we'll do is we'll get to the end of the month and if a little bit extra is there, we're thinking, well, we all need to eat. Why don't we just envelop a few people to come and have a meal together? And we're still giving it away because, you know, it's expensive to be hospitable. So we're still giving it away. So that's kind of the three categories. You know, what is money used for? Ultimately to glorify God. And we can do that through provision of family, giving to the Lord's work in the church, and an expansive ministry. And what you will find is when you think like that, there is no end to what you can do with money that's coming into the household. And when we think like that, then I think we can honor Hebrews 13:5, that we can be free from the love of money, because actually we know that it's providing our avenues to glorify God. I think we can be free from 1 Timothy 6:10, that we're going to love money being our root of evil, because actually the money is now our root of good because we're going through these three avenues. And I think we can honor Psalm 37:21, righteous are those that are generous and give. And I think we can take money, which we are scared to talk about because ultimately we kind of want it and want more of it. And we can change that to, I'm open to talk about money. The Lord has blessed us. And if I'm honest, I want the Lord to bless us even more so I can do more provision for my family, to the church, and more expansive ministry. And someone recently just said to me, the phrase, you know, what's the phrase like, don't look a gift horse in their mouth. And I was basically, because I was kind of like refusing a gift. And one of the things they said to me was, no, what I want you to do with this is take this gift and figure out whatever way you can to bless somebody else in. And it's that kind of connotation of it's okay to have larger sums of money, larger sums of gifting, so that you can then go and do these things to the glory of God. And that's taken me personally a while to kind of figure out. I was the miserly, proud because I'm poor because I'm doing it right. And I'm having to learn, actually, that can be just as much an evil, a hatred of money is just as much as an evil as a love of money. And actually, we have to have a proper mindset that this is a tool, a resource that we can use to expand God's kingdom. So that's why I personally don't struggle talking about money. I'm more than happy to say to somebody, hey, I got $200 left. Let's go and have a meal together and let's have a blessing. Could we invite somebody else? Should we do three courses or two courses? If we do two courses, we can get another three people at the table. You know, I'm personally okay with that. But that's taken me probably 10 years of a journey to work through that. And what you will find is most people are on the angry phase of that journey, of angry they don't have enough, angry that they're being deemed as wanting too much more, angry because they're being asked to be more generous. They're kind of in the angry phase. You kind of got to push through that angry phase and get to the joy of, I am so pleased the Lord has given me a job to provide for my family, to give to the church, and to wonderfully be used to be generous in ministry.
A little applicational point, maybe conversational point. I don't know if it's a point, maybe it's more of a question. Why we struggle to talk about money. Have you noticed, I don't know if this feels like a Midwest thing, but I don't know if it's just a Midwest thing. And I mean the Midwest, not Midwestern Seminary per se, but Midwest, where when somebody compliments something, you have to tell them that you really didn't spend that much money on it.
Yeah.
So I say, oh, that's such a nice dress. Oh, you know what? I got it at Savers, or I got it at the Goodwill. I got a great deal on it. Well, that's a nice car. Yeah. Man, you should believe the deal I got. We got to make sure that people know that we're not spending a lot of money. Yep. We want everyone to know that we don't have that much money, or we keep bringing that up. Is that a sign also of maybe thinking about money too much?
I think so, because what
why can't we just say, thanks?
Thanks, yeah. So it's when you're justifying your expenditure, justifying your possessions, you probably have a minimum, a chip on your shoulder.
I always think about this about my shoes, because I have a lot of shoes.
Yes.
And people always ask me about my sneakers and getting sneakers. And I always have to point out, I never, I won't say never. I rarely pay full price. I get my shoes. I'm looking at the bargain section at Famous Footwear, and I'm going to Ross to see what they've got. Not you, but the store, Ross, Ross Dress for Less, and seeing what kind of cast off old, model Nikes they have. And I always got to tell them that because I'm just nervous that they think I'm just spending hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of dollars every year on shoes, and I'm not. Yeah. But why don't I just say, thanks?
Thanks. So for me, again, a little lesson in this is if someone's complimenting those things, it's like lodge that piece of information in your mind of this person is finds joy in those things. Yeah. Like, you know, like nice dress, shoes, nice, you know, nice car, whatever. Lodge it in your mind. They enjoy those things too. They like those things as well.
Okay.
And so that means one day when you are able to be generous or you know, the Lord prompts you to do something, boom, you can do something there. So just as a thing, like I remember complimenting a guy when I was a teenager. He had a Toyota Celica. It's like a kind of two-seater kind of roadster type thing, kind of old now. And I remember saying to him, man, I love your car. It's so cool. And he was like, yeah, thank you. I kind of bought it with my first paycheck, and he was an accountant. And then about 3 months later, he messaged my mother to say, you know, Ross had mentioned he really liked the car. I'm actually going to a track day. Do you think he would really enjoy coming to see it? And he had like lodged this piece of information in his mind. And to me, that's a...
What is a track day?
Where you go and drive your own car around a racing track. It's called a track day.
You said it like it was such a common thing. That's not a common thing.
Yeah.
I'm going to go drive my car around a racetrack?
Yeah. Track day.
Okay. All right. Okay. I don't think we have those over here.
So like if somebody does say something like that to you or you're...
Anyone can take any car?
Yeah. Yeah, it's a track day. You take your car and drive on a track.
See, it's like your Chrysler LeBaron out there.
Yeah, you just go off you go. Loads of VW Golfs and 18-year-olds driving VW Golfs.
Okay, I'm sorry.
But yeah, it's going things like someone comes around to our house. Miriam has lots of plants in our house, and they'll quite often they'll comment on those are really lovely plants. You know, I'm not really a green finger. I can't really grow plants. Like we're lodging that in our minds. So the next time they come around, we're just like, here's a clipping from the plant. Here's some instructions how to grow it. Off you go. Like enjoy it. So I think for me, think less about justifying something and think more about, a little bit of information. I might be able to bless that person one day in the future, or even right now I can bless them with it. So just a different.
You like these shoes? I take them off my
feet. Take them off and just give them to probably clean them first.
I want to put some Dr. Scholes in there maybe. I don't know.
Oh, we now have a tour coming around the Spurgeon Library, so we're distracted now.
They should turn some lights on.
They should turn some lights on, yeah. Do you think they're FTC podcast listeners? Do they think they want to know more about money and why they should give it away?
Maybe so. All I know is that each person should do as he has decided in his heart, not reluctantly or out of compulsion, since God loves a cheerful giver. 2 Corinthians 9:7. If you enjoy the podcast, be generous with us. Give us a good review.
You must give us a review.
Apple Podcast. You can send us money if you want, you know. But we would prefer, well, I don't know. Yeah, we would like a review. I don't know if we prefer reviews over money, but you could send a review.
Or you could do both.
You could send a review. I mean, they're struggling to give reviews, so I'm not holding my hopes out for some financial donations. Leave us a good review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever you listen to your favorite podcast. And until next time, may Jesus be big in your church. You've been listening to the For the Church podcast, hosted by Jared Wilson, found online at ftc.co. This resource is brought to you by Midwestern Baptist Theological Seminary in Kansas City, Missouri, where we train leaders for the church.